I am unashamed. What about you?
Well, once again, I am. We're rolling from Austin, Texas. I've got Jeppy Coe here with me for a second podcast, which is super exciting because we don't get to see Jeff that much anymore since he's down here. I'm in town because I'm speaking at an event down here, so got to tag in with Jeff. We got Zach coming in from Black Mountain, which is always a blessing. I do want to thank Mike Brock, who helped set up. I'm at the Central Baptist Church, is where Jeff and I are, in Round Rock, and Pastor Jim allowed us to use one of their rooms in here. So I just want to thank those guys for allowing us to be able to do that. I want to mention, before we get into the podcast, that you can pre-order Uncancel, Dad's new book that is really, really good. Zach, would you confer? Excellent book.
Great book.
You can pre-order it on Amazon.com, and pre-order helps us because it moves the status of the book up. So we want to be able to do that. They also are offering a couple of things that that will end today on Friday. So you want to check it out and do it quickly. You can get Theft of America's Soul on Kindle for $2.99, or you can get $5 off Theft in the audiobook. So they're still offering that if you go ahead and sign up this week. Because like I said, it helps us. So check it out. So we mentioned on the last podcast that Dad preached at WFR and did great. And by the way, you can check it out, WFRchurch.org. If you haven't seen it yet, it's really good. I'd kind of set it up in the text because I preached a couple of weeks before Dad, and then I'll preach this week as well after. And, you know, that text in Matthew 16 was just perfect for, I knew Dad would knock it out of the park, which he did. But something else happened, Dad, which I didn't know about this. This was something you and Zach had done because I wasn't there. But what happened after the sermon when you were at WFR? Because I hear that wasn't the end of the story.
Oh, I'd like to know, because when the heads went down, I went out.
Yeah.
Which is a classic Jay's move, by the way.
We'll know what we're talking about. What's the name of that author of the book?
It's a beard ballad. Harold Cronk, who was the director of God's Not Dead, wrote the children's book, and then Phil wrote the foreword for it. So we had set up this deal where Phil was going to read the book to some kids so that we could get some video. We'll show you guys the video. So, yeah, how did it go, Phil?
It went well. I had one little girl when I talked about the
So you were reading the book to kids, right? Yeah. Is that the setup?
No, I'd like
and I was
that.
Speaking well and explaining to them, the little male children, that there come a time when they will have whiskers like these if they desire to have those. And I was beginning to talk to them about the protection aspect of whiskers. And I mentioned, you know, when you're duck hunting and deer hunting, you know, and you'll be warm while you're in the deer stand. And one of the little girls, she said, "Oh, but I love animals. Surely you don't shoot animals." I said, "Hey, girl, I love animals too, fried."
How old were these kids?
She fell back on her back and went to kicking her heels, and I thought, well, there's room for growth here.
I don't do this very often, but the only scene I ever like just where I laughed really hard on our little duck show was when they had Cy go in there, and when y'all did the class, you taught one group, the older kids, how to clean a duck.
In a high school,
And they pretty well just said, "Go in there and do it, and we'll film it."
Yeah.
And they told Cy to tell stories. So Cy walks in there, who knows what he's going to say. He's like, "You ever heard of a place called Nom?" I mean, they had no idea that Cy was fixed to go off on this, and then there.
So then he proceeds to tell a story about a tiger there, which he says ripped the arm off of a soldier. And so he's telling this classic Cy story, and they're showing the picture of those kids' faces, and they're just like in horror.
Yeah, and what's funny is people around the world thought, "Oh, they made all this stuff up." I've heard that same story from Cy many times about the tiger dragging the guy through the woods.
I must admit that speaking to 8 and 9 year old children about whiskers
is humbling.
It's a great little book about fatherhood and direction, and with whiskers, it should be with whiskers comes age, and that also comes parenting, being a model for your children. And I was trying to get that across, you know, when the little girl got disturbed because she said, I think he's talking about killing animals. And all of a sudden, the old gray beard, I was the tyrant, you know. Yeah. But I explained to her.
I'm surprised you didn't go to Genesis 9 on that.
Yeah, well.
Birthplace of honey.
You know, she was young, and I just you know, she was kind of kicking around. Beautiful little girl. So I thought it pretty funny myself, you know, how young girls in this age. When's the last time I've ever talked to a group of little children? It's been a while.
Yeah. But it's biblical, so.
Yeah, it's biblical.
Yeah, we usually shield you from those kind of environments. But it's interesting because I'm wondering how there's a little girl in West Monroe, Louisiana, attending WFR Church that is you know, her family's not killing animals, because everybody I know around there is heavy into deer hunting, squirrel hunting.
I was surprised. But Zach asked me who wrote that book, Gronk?
Harold Kronk.
But it's a wonderful little book Kronk. About raising children and fathers.
How do you spell the guy's name? All I'm hearing is Kronk, like a crock pot.
C-R-O-N-K, Kronk.
Oh, Kronk.
Kronk.
Like Gronk, like Gronkowski.
It's a beautiful
Kronk.
Little story about fatherhood, which we need more of. By the way, he's addressing an issue that needs to be addressed when it comes to fathers, you know, males, patriarchs. So I was just telling the little children that, you know, and some of them got to squirming a little bit there, you know. But overall, I thought the little boys, they were just astonished that one day, if they desired, they'll have hair coming out of their face. And it's a symbol of a lot of things. Age is one and wisdom is number two. So I was just trying to get that in their little heads. And but I thought it went well.
Yeah, that's why we got, I mean, really, what spoke to me about the book is, I mean, we're at a place now where you guys know this. I mean, there is an all-out assault on fatherhood, just masculinity in general. And so I love this book because it's just a kind of a whimsical way of kids, you know, it's a story about a kid who's identifying with his father. He's watching his dad grow a beard. Then he's like, I want to grow a beard. So they grow one together. They're chopping wood. They're doing, you know, wearing flannel shirts. It's a simple book, but I think we need more of it. I'm glad you did that, Phil. I appreciate you doing that.
Well, one of the aspects of sharing Jesus with people is getting people to understand the method that God used to show the Apostle Peter there would no longer be any food laws. That was under the law of Moses, certain things you could not eat. But when Jesus showed up and grace, full of grace and truth, the Apostle Paul, in about Acts chapter 10, Peter's up on the roof. He sees this vision. It looks like a giant sheet being let down by its four corners. The sheet contained all kinds of four-footed animals. I just brought the thing about hunters because Peter recorded and that he saw and he heard God say, arise, kill, and eat four-footed animals, birds of the earth, reptiles of the ground. So no more food laws. And one of the little eight-year-olds was having trouble with that, but she had never heard that.
Well, she needed to hear it.
So that's one case for fathers. A father should teach their children that.
You'd be proud of River. You know, he's going through puberty right now, and he's got a nice mustache. I was like, buddy, you keep letting that go, you're going to look like Tom Selleck.
That's it.
Which River's so little, it's hard for me to imagine him going through puberty. But, you know, Jeff, I was thinking about that because you and Jace are into treasure hunting. But, and I may be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you get into treasure hunting really just to do it something with him because he kind of got into it too? Or did he do it later?
Yeah,
y'all do that together. Right?
Yeah, so when I went with Jace, you know, at their old house, like I got fired up about it when I told River about it. He was like, because what kid doesn't want to go find treasure?
Yeah.
I mean, I've wanted to do that my whole life.
It sounds great, but Jout looked at a way to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
He was like, I might find something really valuable and cash in. Oh, yeah, and I'm going to get my, you know, let's hunt together, you know.
Well, I've mentioned before on the podcast that when I saw Jep digging through my change tray in my truck, I said, Jep, what are you doing? He said, just looking for coins, valuable coins. You never know where they may be hanging out.
Yeah.
I was like, this is low-hanging fruit here at Al's truck.
That's where that was right. coming from.
Jep raced to see me because he said, Dad, do you know of any place around here where I may look for coinage and maybe find some? I said, there's a mailbox down there that my mother stuck up down there. And she said, you need to charge people when they drive down here on the river a buck. Charge them a dollar to launch their boat because the launches are not many on the river. So I said, where that mailbox is, Jep, money used to go into that box. I said, I figure there's a few coins dropped. Well, he said, where is it? Where was it? So I went down there. The mailbox is no longer there, but I knew where it was.
Yeah.
I said, the mailbox was right here. So look in here. Well, about an hour later, he comes running down up to me. He said, you're not going to believe what I found.
Gold coin.
Oh, look, no. He just had handfuls of coins that dated way back for 20 years. So there were just quarters and 50-cent pieces and dimes. And he said, boy, I've hit the jackpot. So he's been a treasure hunter ever since. Yeah, good night.
And then he split it with you because it's your
land. Didn't give me a dime.
Oh, good.
Hey, I work for
finders, keepers, losers, reapers.
You're supposed to
split it.
It
was only about $12.
With the landowner is kind of the general rule. You split the proceeds because he might want to come back.
It was amazing how much coinage that the boat launchers had dropped in 20 years, 25 years. It was amazing how much money was under the earth. I was really surprised.
Now, the coolest thing I found was a little like placard that goes on like a desk that said James Robertson, which I don't know if he ever had a job. You know, it's like, you know, it's like something you'd go into an office and see your name.
Really?
Yeah, I found that. Yeah.
Well, you know.
Well, you know, it's One of my earliest memories, Dad, when we were living in Junction City and you were teaching and coaching, and I had started to school at like 4 years old. Cause I think it was just glorified daycare because mom was the secretary for the superintendent. And I probably wasn't supposed to be in. I mean, it was not even kindergarten. It was like first grade. So I was like super young. But you would walk me to school every day. I would walk with you. And then you would drop me off at my classroom and you'd go on and do your stuff. And so walking along that road there in Junction City, because we lived right next to the school campus, we found some money one time. We started looking and somebody had dropped some coins and we found it. And then every day we would stop and kind of spread out our search pattern. And we wound up finding quite a bit of money right there on that school campus. And I mean, I'm 4 years old. So that was 52 years ago. I still remember it. And we did that together. So I guess in a sense, Dad was doing treasure hunting, Jace, back in the day before you were even born.
You got to remember, if this wasn't cool, there's no way. And we're in Matthew 17 today, but in Matthew 17, we have a situation over taxes come up. And Jesus, of all things that he could have chosen to make an illustration, he tells Peter to go catch a fish and look in his mouth and there'll be a couple of coins and you go pay the taxes that we owe from that fish's mouth. So I took that to mean finding lost coins are cool, number one. Or if it wasn't, he wouldn't have sent him to do that process. And number two, he knows where all the good stuff is.
Yeah.
Now, it could have been a miracle. He could have put the coins in there, or he could have known that fish swallowed the coins. I mean, I don't know what your take on that is.
That's what gets me. There's so many levels of that miracle that are amazing. Let's take our first break. One of the things I didn't know until Good Ranchers became one of our sponsors is that about 80% of the meat that we eat in America comes from other countries. I did not realize that. And the problem with that is it's cost a lot of American jobs. Over 100,000 independent farms and ranchers have gone out of business since 2015. And Good Ranchers, their claim to fame is that they want to keep American farms busy and producing for American families. So we like these guys. It's kind of an America First agenda. So we want you to check these guys out and support them. You go to goodranchers.com/Phil, and you'll get 10 free bistro filet medallions, and I do love my filet medallions, with your order. Or even better, you can subscribe, and you will also save $25 off each box of their meats for life. So when you subscribe, you save this money, makes it cheaper. Your monthly subscription box will show up on schedule right at your door. So you get 10 free bistro medallions, that's $100 value, and free express shipping if you go to goodranchers.com/Phil or use the code Phil at checkout. So that's goodranchers.com/Phil or use the code Phil at checkout.
I ran up on an interesting thing. I went duck hunting up in Nebraska. I sent Phil some videos of the 40,000 mallards that were sitting on this guy's place. But so he's taking us around, showing us his place up here in Nebraska. And there were two boulders that were stuck in the ground, and a spring was emerging from the boulders, and it went and created this little straight river that went down into the bigger river. So apparently where this was at was a famous spring where the Mormon Trail came through. And one of the guys that were with us, when we got up there, he got out of the back of his Gator, pulls out a metal detector, and he started finding stuff. I said, man, if Jason Jett would love to see this.
Yeah, I appreciate the call on that. Well, we're duck hunting and we're metal detecting. How many ducks did y'all actually shoot?
Huh?
We didn't do too well in the shoot. The weather was just—it was probably 75 degrees.
Zach, let's analyze this. You said that this guy had 40,000 ducks on his place. You went and saw them. Then y'all went and hunted them, but then you didn't do very good.
He does a hunt. He has a sanctuary of about 500 acres where he doesn't hunt, and that's where they were. Mm-hmm. So then he has flooded corn where we hunted, which. So, you know,
sounds like we have a failure to execute the plan.
I did okay.
Okay.
Zach said they expected too much of him once he said, I'm the nephew of Phil Robertson, the duck call builder. So they said, whoa. But then they were let down by saying, yeah, well, it happens.
No, they said, we're going to let you shoot the first duck since you're the duck commander's nephew. So you better not miss. Because all the expectations are riding on you.
Did you rise to the challenge?
Oh yeah, I hit it. I hit the first four ducks that came in, and they were all singles. We didn't hit any. We didn't have any big groups work, which is But it was fun to see. You'd have loved it.
So you went four. You went four for your first four.
I went four for four.
Really?
So not mad because I hadn't duck hunted in a year, so I hadn't even shot my shotgun in over a year.
Well, that sounds like you exceeded the expectations.
We're 2 weeks out on our duck season, and we'll hope that some of those mallards in Nebraska will move on further south.
I like how you're looking.
I like how Dad's looking at his wrist.
Like I've owned a watch before.
Missy was giving me a hard time because she's like, why would you say she had listened to one of the earlier podcasts? She's like, why are you driving around town looking for a bank to see what time it is? Why didn't you just look at your watch? I said, babe, watches were frowned upon in my upbringing. Even though my dad looks at his wrist at least once a day and makes some kind of time reference, he actually hasn't owned one, and it's kind of like I am about headboards. You know, you shouldn't own a headboard. It's a waste of time.
But what's interesting is, Jace, on that one, he looked at the watch. I mean, he held it up, but he was talking about a calendar. Because he was talking about November. I mean, you weren't even talking about time, Dad. You were talking about calendar dates, but you were looking at your wrist.
And one of the arguments.
I consider watches to be clutter, too much clutter.
But here's the problem with that, Phil. One of your arguments.
Internet,
you use,
too much clutter.
You use more than any other time argument.
Timepieces, too much clutter.
One of your arguments you use more than any other is that we count time by Jesus. And I'm like, well, you don't. Because you don't like any clocks. You're not counting any kind of time.
But a calendar that comes my way from time to time, I look at that top date, and I say, "What? How many years since Jesus got 2,021 years? Since that's all the time I need to know, right there."
Okay.
So, Jace, what is the most oft asked question by Dad in a duck blind every single day? What is it?
What time is it?
What time, boys? Right now, exactly what time is it? 7:30 Okay, yep.
Because mid-morning is usually when the mallards come in. Mid-morning.
No, so not just, mid-morning. 10 to 10:15
Everybody, to 10:15
Hush up. Hush up.
Y'all are talking too loud.
This is a prime time. I'm like, what time? It from 10 to 10:15 everyone must be silent, have their hands on their gun in the ready position, because that's this right. is called prime time.
Well, well said. Everybody has a computer but me. Fine, I can live with it. Everybody has a watch but me. Yes, we do. I can live with it. But I'm not going to partake of either one of those endeavors.
Yeah.
So Jeff, I have to mention, Jace mentioned the story for Missy about the bank. So last week on the podcast, he remembers the number where you used to call in and get the time from the bank. You remember like back in the old days?
I remember doing that.
He remembered the number. Crazy. And he hasn't called it in 15 or 20 years, I guess, at least.
Yeah.
And so he goes and gets his phone, and we call it, and it's still a bank, and you still get the
really?
Time. Yeah.
Do you know After that? All hey, these years. Do you know this? That they called me back. I'm kidding.
I just wanted to see what y'all say.
They wanted me to take out a loan.
We were laughing about that the other day because Jace, I mean, he can't even remember what day it is. But he remembered that number.
No,
for
I
bank,
said, look, that really phone cool. hasn't rung in years, decade. And they still, that it just shows you about life, though, how people won't change to fit the modern times. They still had that. You know, I'm the first person called that in a decade. Ain't nobody using that number. Everybody knows what time it is now. They still.
There's probably some little old guy living out in the middle of nowhere, some little old lady that still calls it, that's still living in the. Living in the past.
I mean, that's why they're out in the middle of nowhere. You don't care what time it is.
I have found.
Unless your dad.
I have found that without a timepiece, as in watch or computer, without that, if you don't have that, I have found that life is less stressful, in my opinion, if you don't have a timepiece or a computer. Life is less stressful.
That's analysis.
There's no doubt.
That's my logic.
That's true. That is true. And that's why when people like Zach loves to camp and like his whole family, they take off and he unplugs. Like I can't get him for, you know, a while because he goes places where the phone won't work. But that's about what it takes, isn't it, Zach, to just really kind of unplug from the world
there
just to
go.
Be with your family or whatever.
There you go.
I think it's healthy. Yeah, it's not. We talked about this last week about Facebook's metaverse. I don't think it's healthy to be constantly plugged in. Everybody has access to you. I think that's probably honestly, Phil, why you're so effective.
The rock band Chicago had it right. Does anyone really know what time it is?
Yes, they did.
Without time.
Well, that's pretty good, Dad.
That was good.
You could be a singer. You could be a.
Can we read this Matthew singer. 17? Because I'm itching to get into this.
Get after
Let's
it.
Let's do it, Jace.
Look,
you lead us into
look,
it.
Look, I mean, all of a sudden, which this bothers me about the religious world, because I'm transparent. When they do things I don't like, I say it. They get to chapter 17, and a lot of people are like, they don't know what to make of this, on why this is even in here, or what does it mean. But I'm like, Jesus has spent the first 16 chapters proving who he is, and now what he's going to do about it, and he lays out his plan that he's going to have to die, and he rebukes Peter because Peter didn't get that. And then all of a sudden, I would think, this represents a prelude to the resurrection, to the power that he possesses. And maybe this is the answer to the shadow of what happened with Moses and the giving of the law, because there's a lot of similarities on what happened at Mount Sinai with Moses and this. When you read Exodus, you'll make that transition.
By the way, I would add it's both.
It's both the law. It's a culmination of the law of which he said he was the fulfillment, mm-hmm. and it's a culmination of prophecy because he said he also fulfilled all prophecy. So I think that's why God chose to send Moses and Elijah into this moment, send them forward into this moment, yeah. or back, depending
that,
on your
plus
perspective.
Jason, just one comment. I think it worthy of note, and I mentioned it yesterday in the sermon I gave, is that the atheist will say to us, y'all believe in the miraculous, the supernatural, and we don't. Mm-hmm. But then they say, nothing exploded, and there's the cosmos, which would be a miracle of gigantic proportions. And out of that explosion came salt water, and that's where what made humanity mm-hmm. is the slime left over from the salt water that came from the explosion.
It was a good point.
Would be miraculous.
Which would be a miracle.
It would be a miracle. So they believe in miracles, but they say, we're not going to follow Jesus because y'all believe in the supernatural.
I've said that too, even about, you know, think about a watermelon plant coming out of the ground after water hit the dirt and a seed is there, and then all this green vine starts crawling. Well, this is borderline miraculous here.
Because
if you looked into the seed before it was planted, you wouldn't see that green vine.
At all.
It's not there.
Acorn about the size of
same concept.
Little bitty acorn. And it turns into a gigantic bull oak tree that will stop a vehicle at 80 miles an hour. There, boom. And they say, we believe that.
So that's back what we talked about in the last podcast about Revelation, because that's the revelation of what's created from Romans 1.
It's not a natural process. It's a supernatural process, in my opinion.
It is. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. So we're all blessed to be homeowners, all of us here on Unashamed Podcast, which is a great blessing. You never want to just immediately not appreciate the blessings that we get. One of the things that's unfortunate, because with every good blessing, sometimes comes a curse. And if you own a home, there are people out there that want to steal the title to your home. And so we have one of our sponsors, Home Title Lock, that's going to help you avoid this fraud. Cyber thieves, they go into, as Dad calls it, computer land. They steal your title. They say you sold it to them. They own it. They take all your equity. They spend it on whatever they want to, and they leave you holding the bag. It's unfortunate, but it happens to a lot of people, and we don't want it to happen to you. Home Title Lock puts a virtual barrier around your home's title. So check these guys out. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. You're going to register your address. You're going to make sure that you still own your home. Then you're going to enter the code RADIO, and you're going to get 30 free days of protection. So that's HomeTitleLock.com. Use the code RADIO, 30 days of free protection. Check them out and make sure you're secure. I asked Jep, before you read this text, Jace, I asked Jep to look up the word transfigured just in our language to understand what it means, because that's a word you don't see really anywhere else
I've
in the Bible.
I've got a good guess. I've got a guess.
All right, give us your guess, then he'll read it.
Metamorphosis.
It is to transform into something more beautiful or elevated. And it had an example with it. It says, the world is made luminous and is transfigured.
So let me say this. Okay. In a world where we're pursuing the metaverse and the meta, what's the other meta? What's the new meta? What's the new Facebook? Oh, is that?
Metamucil?
It's just meta.
It's just meta?
We got the metaverse is the world that you live in virtually, but the company's name is Meta.
How about a reading written 2,000 years ago, roughly, of an individual claiming to be God who undergoes a metamorphosis?
Instantaneously.
I mean, now this is riveting. See, this is what they're pursuing. So that's why they say, look, we're going to be meta. Well, until I see something like this, because this gets my attention, having a social network where we're fixing to get into the meta does not interest me. because
unless you're an android, named Zuckerberg, this would not interest
you. There he was transfigured. He goes to a high mountain, and there he is transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. I'm not real sure what that means, but Revelation, the book of Revelation, has these same references referring to the Son of Man / Son of God. Just then there appeared before them Moses, who, if you're new to the faith, well, he's dead. He died.
Had been that way a while.
A few books ago. Now, there was a dispute between the
evil
one.
About 2,000 years.
Yeah, about where the body of Moses was, because I believe, Al, you'll probably know where this is, God buried him. It said God buried him.
Yep.
So, I'm not sure where that is.
I think it's in Numbers. The end of Numbers or Deuteronomy. Yeah, but it was Mount Nebo, I think, was the mountain.
So now, you have to go back and read. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah, and they're talking with Jesus. You remember what happened to Elijah? Now, he didn't die. He just
pulled off the planet.
He just levitated and left. So I just think
a flaming chariot.
I think it's
way.
Interesting in all the commentaries I read about this, and I read a lot. Nobody mentioned the significance that I read that these two men had circumstances out of the norm concerning their death. One of them, there's an argument about where the body is buried, and the other, he didn't die. And now, thousands of years later, they're having a conversation with a radiating Jesus.
On top of a hill.
On top of a mountain, in front of witnesses. Mm-hmm. And look, this wasn't something that was not forgotten. You remember in is that 2 Peter when Peter addresses this scene later on when he writes his letter, he brings it up. I think it's we'll take a pause from Matthew and read what he said. I love this in 2 Peter 1:16. Peter said, "We didn't follow cleverly invented stories when we told you about the power and coming of our Lord Jesus Christ." Because look, that is what the world says. They said, "Well, this is just some story that y'all made up and people wrote down." He said, "We didn't follow that, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty, for he received honor and glory from God the Father when the voice came to him." We're fixed to read about that. From the majestic glory, saying, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." We ourselves heard this voice that came from heaven when we were with him on the sacred mountain. So if you go back to Matthew 17, he then describes, well, Peter in verse 4 says to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here." I mean, I think he was struggling with what to say. He should have just kept his mouth shut.
Hey, Jace, let me mention two things before you read the rest of that. Right. So it's Deuteronomy 34, for those that want to check it out, which is where it says Moses, he climbed Mount Nebo, and it says he died and God buried him. But no one knows where his grave is to this day. And then also in the book of Jude, we get a little insight that the Michael, the archangel, was arguing with Satan over the body of Moses. So that's just a couple of things that you mentioned earlier.
I'll say, Al, the significance of that goes back to this. The evil one held people enslaved through their fear of death. Hebrews 2:14-16 talks about that. And when Jesus died and was raised, he freed us from that fear of death, which goes in with the evil one being a murderer from the beginning. So when anyone dies, I think that's why he was interested in where that body is, because to him, that ended that. That's all of it. Well, he can't find the body. He's like, well, wait a minute here. I believe that it makes sense for him to be having this argument about that, cause since he's the one having the power over death.
I think you're right. That was part of it. And I think that's also part of the power of this transfiguration, is it shows the ability that Jesus has over the living and the dead. You know, to him, it's not that big a deal just to have them show up, even though, you know, they left the earth in mysterious circumstances too. Let's take another break, Jason.
So then Peter, just bumbling, stumbling, fumbling, says, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, I'll put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." And I think this had to do something with the tabernacle laws, and he didn't know what to do. And he's like, maybe we should get you some shelter here. And this is,
you know what you say, you know what you, what the southern idiom for Peter is in this, Jace? Yeah. Bless him.
Yeah.
Bless him.
Bless
well,
his heart.
I think this is got to be the most embarrassing moment, probably right behind the Corinthians forgetting the gospel. Here's an embarrassing moment. When you're interrupted by God, you know, you're talking while he was still speaking about shelters and it's good for us to be here with two dead guys. A bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, whom I love, with him I am well pleased." Now I want to stop right there, and if allow me to a 1 minute sermon. You remember where this was said before?
Yep. Jesus' baptism.
Yeah, when we went from the water to the wilderness, Jesus was baptized and he was declared to be the Son of God. The Holy Spirit came on him and Jesus said those three things. I've preached that many times, that God says the same thing. The difference here is the next line. And I think in your sermon Sunday, Phil, when you said, we spent all this time figuring out who Jesus is, and now we have another level of deeper understanding of who God is, and he adds this phrase, listen to it. Because it's one thing to recognize, okay, that Jesus could be the Son of God. And as you search, you're like, oh, listen to him. I mean, that was what was happening here. So think about what the resurrection accomplished in trying to figure out, is there a God? Who is he? What does he want from me? Well, when you understand who Jesus is, you understand who God is. And when you listen to him, things are going to change in your life for the better. I mean, that's what I believe.
You are correct. Faith comes from hearing. Hearing.
Yeah.
Listen
to hear,
to him.
You got to listen.
Romans 10.
To him.
Yeah. And in this moment, I love this. As you mentioned, where do we hear this before? We heard that first part. This is my son whom I'm well pleased. Whenever Jesus was baptized, listen to him. And then I love this next line, because it's kind of scary, I think it makes sense when you think about the totality of what he's saying here. When the disciples heard this, you say, what did they do when they heard this? This is what they did. They fell face down to the ground and were terrified.
Yep.
And I think so often we think of Jesus as this cosmic bellhop. We think of him petting the lamb. We think of him with the kids around him. Yeah, and that's certainly part of what Jesus chose to be. But I mean, in this moment, in this transfiguration, Jesus is taking on an appearance that is almost a foretaste of glory divine. It's a foretaste of what the resurrected Jesus is going to be. It's a terrifying thing to see him. When Paul saw him in Acts 9 on the road to Damascus, it says he fell to the ground. Paul did. Paul felt, and in Revelation chapter 1, it says, this is John on the Isle of Patmos, says, "When I saw him, I fell at his feet like a dead man." And what I love about all three of these passages, Matthew 17, Acts 9, and Revelation 1, is that Jesus doesn't leave us in our terrified fear. In each, Revelation 1, he says, "And he placed his right hand on me and said, don't be afraid. I'm the first, the last. I am the living one. I was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore, and I hold the keys of Hades and death." in the Transfiguration, when it says they fell on their face and they were terrified, look what Jesus did. He came to them and he touched them. Jesus touched them and he said, "Get up, don't be afraid." And they lifted up their eyes and they saw no one but Jesus himself. I'm thinking, God.
Well, how ironic is that they were that terrified, which I came up with a formula because a lot of people have trouble understanding this because they're like, well, how could they be so fearful in that moment? Because the number one phrase in the Bible is don't be afraid. But fear God is like number five.
Fear God, and in what John Matthew recorded, is terrifying.
So here's what I think. I think when they realized, just think about this. You have two people who were here hundreds of years before they were here, have now showed up, and they figured that out. We have this bright light going on, and now all of a sudden, God the Father is speaking. And they get it, that there is a God and he is actually speaking. And we have people who supposedly we thought were dead having a conversation. Well, then
the ultimate lesson is don't mess with him.
Well, and I think they also realized that, you know what? He knows me way better than I thought. And there's no escaping him, even if I die. Well, that causes sheer terror because you feel that you can't feel any smaller in that moment than if
he
you're
was
like,
kind of whispering, it's a dreadful thing to fall into the hands of the living God.
All right. But then the don't be afraid is the part of, but here's God in this moment through Jesus, who you're supposed to listen to, who just told me to get up, is he's all good. He's for me.
Yeah.
We know the grace is coming. He's not going to make a mistake. He's 100% just. He's fair. I mean, so I think that's the way this thing works, is that, yeah, God knows us, and that causes us to fear because we're flawed and we make mistakes, but what gives us comfort and confidence is that we know him and he's all righteous, all holy, he's fair, he's gonna do what's right. And I think that's a point he was trying to make,
which explains fully faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we don't see. Well, they're there on that mountain and they're certain of what they're looking at. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And they're giving us the story, and they said, check this out. You may not see him, but this is what he looks like if he wants to, that transfiguration. You're like, okay, one thing comes out of that. Don't be messing with him at all.
So let's take our last break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0? My annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee. Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit FearlessArmyRollCall.com to secure your spot.
I think there's a practical measure too, Jay. As you mentioned earlier when we started into this, that a lot of scholars are like, you know, not exactly understanding why this happened, when it happened. But to me, it's very clear. You mentioned before when the first time that God spoke, when Jesus was baptized, remember the disciple, he hadn't gotten the disciples yet. So, I mean, John the Baptist saw what happened, but these guys didn't. And they had only heard about it because, you know, then he goes out and he calls these guys. So, this is a reaffirmation to the disciples of who Jesus is. And that's why I think he adds that last phrase, listen to him, because for the first time, he's just told them what he's got to do. And now they're visually seeing that he really is the Son of God.
Yeah.
And he has the power to conjure back from the great beyond two of the most historic figures in Israel's history. So, I mean, just from a practical measure, it makes perfect sense in the context of the, of where Moses puts this, of why this happened, when it happened.
By the way, when the law was given at Mount Sinai, it was similar to this. When the people
That's
saw
correct.
The thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet, you can imagine the God-blown trumpet. They heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke. They trembled with fear, and they stayed at a distance. And they said to Moses, speak to us. You got to remember, listen to him. Speak to us yourself, and we will listen. But do not have God speak to us, or we will die. I mean, it was vengeance. The law of Moses had been given. And he said to the people, don't be afraid. God has come to test you so that the fear of God will keep you from sinning. Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say is, like, I think every time in the Bible when God shows up in some kind of physical form, everybody's face goes to the ground. I think maybe you can sense how sinless and perfect he is, and your own kind of shows your brokenness. And it's like, that's why it says every knee will bow. I mean, you can't help but go down because you're like, whoa.
That's right.
Yeah, because we're undone. I love that. I think that's the point. I think that the point here is you got Moses and Elijah. Moses is representation of the law. Elijah's representation of the prophets. And they all kind of coming to this point where the whole thing is wrapped up in the person of Jesus. He said, well, what's the practical point of that? Is what Jeff just said, that you're undone. I think you bring nothing to the table. And I think the fear
you can get out of here, you can get out of here alive. Listen to him.
Yeah. But in that moment though, Phil, I mean, you know, you're looking at this glorious being and you're like, whoa, any attempt that I thought, any shelter I thought I had, I'm done. And I think so many times we think, well, Jesus comes back, we're just going to run to Jesus. And I think what's going to happen, honestly, when Jesus comes back, I think first thing we're all going to do, I think everybody is going to hit the deck and be like, uh-oh.
Yep.
I think there'll be a moment.
No doubt.
I agree with that.
There's going to be a moment where we're all like, whoa, oh my goodness. He's way better than I thought, and I'm way worse than I thought. But I think if you're in Christ, and the beauty of this whole thing is he's going to touch you. He's going to put his hand on your shoulder, and just what he did every time. He said, don't be afraid. I got this.
And look, Zach, that's a difference in the two covenants, because Dad painted the picture. They couldn't touch the mountain or they would die.
That's right.
So not only did they not get touched, they couldn't even touch the mountain where the presence of God was.
That's correct.
And yet what you're describing in those texts you read was that Jesus is touching us. That's the difference in the first covenant of law and the second covenant of fulfillment of law in Jesus.
That's Paul's point in 2 Corinthians 3, which references what Phil was talking about when Moses went and met with God. And, you know, Moses would come down and he was radiating the glory of God because God's so glorious. But then it says, but I love this verse 11, it says, for if that which fades away with glory was much more than what which remains in his glory. Therefore, having such a hope, we use great boldness in our speech, and we are not like Moses, who used to put a veil over his face so that the sons of Israel would not look intently at the end of what was fading away, but their minds were hardened until this very day at the reading of the Old Covenant. To your point, Al, the same veil remains unlifted because it is removed in Christ. But to this day, whenever Moses is read, a veil lies over their hearts. But whenever a person turns to the Lord, I love this, the veil is taken away. Now, the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty.
Yep.
But we all, with unveiled faces, beholding in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as from the Lord the Spirit. I love that.
Great.
That's powerful. You raising your hand, Jeff?
I'm raising my hand because, look, you think about what the old law, how much material that he gave them. I mean, we got whole books in the Old Testament that was written. Woo. And here we go. You start in John 1 where it says Moses brought us the law, and where's that, John 1?
Jesus came full of grace and truth.
Grace and truth. And here he says, look, here's the foundation for the church, is that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, which he's already announced that when he said, this is my son, when he's baptized, who I love and I'm well pleased. And so all those laws and all those books and all those history, and even think about modern day, all the churches and the programs and the creed and the sermons and just all these scholars putting all these commentaries and material, and God gives a three-word sermon. Three words.
Listen to him.
Listen to him.
Man.
I mean, I'm like, you wanna grow a church? You want to put some spark in your church? You know, and we've all been to churches where you walk in and you think, oh, who died here? I mean.
Frozen, chosen.
Yeah. And I got a news flash. He came back. Yeah, we've got the death part because this place is dead. He came back. So I think that's why I go around to people. And, you know, a lot of what I say in my speeches always make people uncomfortable because I say, stop listening to the preacher. I'm not trying to get you to go to church. I don't want you to listen to the preacher. Well, the preacher's looking around like, what are you talking about? And I get it from right here, because the building block of the church, the rock that we're built on, that Jesus is the Son of God, and he said, you listen to him. I mean, that's where we get our material. And that's why I always say you got to focus on Jesus and what he said, because you have it in, somebody put it in red letters, and that should be unadulterated the focus and mission of our church home bases across the world.
Well said.
So let me close it out by reading these last four verses. As they were coming down the mountain, verse 9, Jesus said, don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. So he goes back to the resurrection, Dad.
Yep.
Then he says, the disciples asked him, why then did the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first? Jesus replied, to be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him, but have done to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. Then the disciples understood he was talking about John the Baptist. So I thought it's a perfect ending because it goes back to where we began, in that what Jesus was going to have to do is what he reminds them of again. That was the point of the whole exercise.
You betcha.
Which is powerful. Thanks, Jeb, for being here. Jeb's got to do some cooking tomorrow, so he won't be back with me, but we'll be back and try it again next time.
Bye, Jeb.
See you, buddy.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.